From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's been a strange, difficult year to observe many of life's major passages, and pregnancy and birth are among them, with virtual doctor's visits, fewer people in the delivery room, and restrictions on who can come and help with the newborn. And so today in The Exchange, we ask what being pregnant and giving birth have been like this year. The idea for our show comes from listener Carrie Poston Keene, who suggested it on NHPR's listener survey. You can participate too. Submit your ideas to nhpr.org/surveys. And we welcome your questions and stories right now too. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook, and our phone number is 800-892-6477. We have three guests. Jaylon Von Mertens, she's a certified nurse midwife at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center. Jaylon, great to have you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Also, Dr. Sarah Baskell, she's an OBGYN at Catholic Medical Center. Dr. Baskell, thank you for taking the time.
Of course. Excited to be here, Laura.
And also with us, Amanda Lockwood. She gave birth to her first child in April of 2020 at the scary height of the pandemic. And Amanda, welcome. Thank you also for your time.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
So, Jaylon, what are some of the biggest changes you've seen in terms of this whole experience that you're helping your patients through, pregnancy and giving birth?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we had to pivot really quickly in the beginning to telehealth. And in obstetric care, that was kind of the third rail. Like, if we just thought that's never going to happen. You have to see people in person. And we've been surprised by how we've been able to integrate it into the prenatal schedule. And now we actually have points of care that I don't think we're going to stop having be a telehealth point of care. And so we do our first visits over telehealth because we're kind of getting all the prenatal balls rolling, for lack of a better term. And that way we can get to know people without them having to come in for a visit. Many of our clients come from an hour or more away, so that can really help them save on drive time and visits at the medical center. And then we do a 2-week telehealth check-in postpartum, which has been really lovely because moms don't have to, again, come into the medical center, schlep their babies. They're already doing so many pediatric appointments, and that's been a really helpful check-in on mom's moods, how they're adjusting to either having one baby or another baby and growing their family. And so I think that's been one of the biggest changes for us, but one that, you know, we took on willingly and happily, and actually have found some great benefit to our service.
Wow. Dr. Baskell, what do you think? What are some of the biggest changes that you've seen in terms of the way that you practice?
I think the two biggest changes that we've seen are, you know, one, how much we've had to learn as we go. And that's really uncomfortable for us in the medical profession, as well as for patients. You know, they're trusting their midwife or their doctor, you know, for guidance on something. And a lot of the stuff is, we don't know. So that's been really different, sitting in front of the patient at a prenatal appointment being like, I don't know what the policy is going to be next week. I don't know what they're going to come out with for the vaccine. And then the other big change is just, I think, on a practical level, the visitor policies, you know, in hospitals and the clinic and ultrasounds, where, you know, women are used to having their support team at their side when they give birth historically, and as well as in the medical environment. And so to kind of, for safety, scale that back, that's the biggest change that I've noticed.
Yeah, there's the whole obviously physical, biological aspect of this, but there is a huge social, emotional aspect. You're so right. And I have an email right here from Caitlin who refers to that. She says, I just gave birth to our first child, a little girl, in August. For us, one of the hardest things about being pregnant during the pandemic was that my husband wasn't allowed at my doctor's appointments. He didn't get to see her ultrasound. And the first time he heard her heartbeat was while we were in the hospital to deliver her. So, wow, Caitlin, thank you for writing in. Amanda, 1 month before your due date, You had your daughter in April. The pandemic hit in March. I can't even imagine what that was like for you. How did that change your last month of pregnancy, Amanda?
It drew a definite line in the sand where everything before was exciting and awesome and all these positive experiences, and everything after, I would wake up to pee because, you know, you got to pee 8 times a night when you're that pregnant.
Yep.
And it was like I was waking up to a nightmare. It honestly, it felt like something out of science fiction or, you know, Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale. Everyone knows the show. It just, like, I was just in shock every single day.
What was it, Amanda, that sort of, what were the pieces of that nightmare? I'm guessing there were lots of specifics there.
Yeah, my husband said you'd probably be able to talk 2 hours if they let you about this, so I'll scale it back. But for us, it was kind of how Dr. Baskill just said, you know, learning, like things unfolded so quickly from the CDC that my practice didn't always have the opportunity to go, hey, our visitor policy has changed. So unfortunately, my husband and I were blindsided when we showed up for our week 37 or 38 appointment. And they said, your husband's considered a visitor. And I thought they were joking. And I'm a customer service manager. So I was like, let me speak to your supervisor. This is half of his child. The lady just, I got so emotionally worked up and my blood pressure was so high. She said, he can go in this one time. They, you know, thought I had preeclampsia, but it was just all the anxiety of everything I was internalizing going on with the world. And my midwife looked at me and basically said, I'm so sorry. Like, today's been a heartbreaking day of, you know, communicating to people they can't have the birth plans that they've expected, because it was just one thing taken away after another. You know, first it was, you can't have your doula, and then it was, we hope there's enough, you know, PPE. Yes, your husband will be able to attend your appointment. And then it was, you know, no visitors. I had a doctor at the hospital the day after I delivered who told me no one should cross the threshold of my door unless they were dropping off food or picking up laundry. So like the amount of anxiety that was projected at me, it was just an overburdening weight to carry during the postpartum period, when that time in a mother's life can already break you. It felt really hopeless and discouraging. And one last thing, unfortunately for us, our appointment was changed to telehealth. So we didn't identify that my daughter was breech, and this is just my luck, but I won't go into details, but it was a very awful delivery experience because I ended up having to have an emergency C-section. So all of this is very upsetting to me because we were impacted on such a severe level by COVID.
Wow, Amanda, I'm so sorry. And, you know, I mean, everything worked out, but
yes,
still, what a thing to go through. And we'll talk a little bit later about, you know, postpartum depression and just the need that, you know, parents of newborns have for that community support. But more specifically on the health aspects for a moment. So just to make sure I have it right, Amanda, because some of your later appointments were telehealth, they didn't realize that your baby was breech. For people who don't know what that is, that's basically the baby's facing the wrong direction. So you get to the hospital, you had to have an emergency C-section. Is that right, Amanda?
Yeah, and positive silver lining, thank God I wasn't sent to the birthing center, because COVID was so bad, or like the peak was, you know, coming up against my delivery time. They were going to outsource anybody healthy and young to a birthing center, where that would have been an even worse situation to be in. So I like to go, that's water under the bridge. Thank God I was able to deliver in a hospital and the doctor was on call 10 minutes across the street, because they said, this is going to be really quick and scary. And I said, do whatever you need to do to get this child out safely. And at the end of the day, water under the bridge. I am so happy I have a beautiful, healthy child and that I'm healthy here today. So
Dr. Baskill, what can telehealth be used for, and what are the limitations?
Telehealth is great when it's a counseling-dominated visit. So, you know, postpartum depression is a perfect example of things that are really easily addressed telehealth. You know, when you're checking in and mostly checking in how the woman is feeling in the pregnancy, how she feels the baby move. And then the more objective data is really, a lot of it's dependent on how the system has set up telehealth. So does the woman have access to a blood pressure cuff to take her own blood pressure and listen to the baby's heartbeat? Because those are important data that we want at prenatal visits. So when that's all set up, we can do a lot. But you know, exactly what Amanda was describing, we cannot lay our hands on patients through Zoom. So we cannot feel that breech baby in the pelvis remotely. And so, you know, the kind of when you need a pap smear, I also haven't figured out how to do that through Zoom, or need labs drawn or an ultrasound. Those are ones that we need to see the patient and the baby in person.
Jalen, what do you pull from Amanda's story? I'm just really struck by this.
Yeah, Amanda, that sounds just incredibly challenging. And I am really sorry that that was your birth experience. Just from one mother to another, it's just hard to really be expecting something to go a certain way and be excited and just have the rug pulled out from under you for it sounds like everything, just absolutely everything. I think, you know, to her story and to Dr. Bassel's point about all of the changes and how quick they come, and how we don't know from one visit to the next what the, you know, what the visitor policy will be or how we'll see you sometimes. I would just say that that it sets up so much fear and isolation for moms like Amanda experienced. So I'm just really sorry for your experience, and my heart just really goes out to you.
Listeners, again, we're talking about pregnancy, giving birth, new parenthood in the pandemic, and we'd love to hear from you. If you were pregnant or gave birth within the past year, what was it like? Let's hear your stories, your experiences. Send them in by email, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call 800-892-6477. And all of you to the phones, and Natalie's calling in from Newfields. Hi, Natalie. You're on the Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm just calling in to tell you a little bit about my birth story and actually experience with trying to get the COVID vaccine after giving birth. So I gave birth on January 10th to my first child, Elise. She is, I'm happy to say, healthy and doing really well. But being pregnant during the pandemic was definitely a challenge. I'm a healthcare provider. So I had to work, I'm a pediatric dentist in Portsmouth, and I had to work through being pregnant and all the changes that I had to cope with. So lucky for me, I saw kind of both sides. I knew what the healthcare providers were going through as information was coming in and things were changing. But I also had this kind of fear, uncertainty as to what those changes would bring with regards to my pregnancy. From the pregnancy end of things, they actually fast-tracked me, similar to what Amanda was talking about. Since I'm healthy and young, I was put in the fast track where I only got to see my OB 6 times before giving birth.
Wow, it's not very much.
No, and I didn't really know what was going on because it was my first pregnancy. So often they would be like, well, how do you feel? And I'd say, I feel pregnant. I don't know. So
right.
Just kind of navigating all of that with only 6 visits ended up with a difficult birth story for me as well, where they didn't diagnose my preeclampsia appropriately because I wasn't seen as frequently as I needed to be. So that was really difficult and tricky. And then postpartum, because I'm a healthcare provider, I actually chose to wait until I gave birth to get the vaccine, partly because I'd be on maternity and felt like the providers who were working needed it more than I did at the time. But it ended up being a whole disaster for me to be able to get it postpartum with the vaccine delivery system and all of that kind of challenging aspects of it. So it's really been kind of difficult both pre and postpartum for me to navigate this whole COVID pandemic during this time.
Yeah. And could you talk a little bit more about that, Natalie, please? Sort of, you had your child in January. Typically, family and friends sort of gather and help out and, you know, watch the baby so you can take a walk or a shower? I mean, what have you done in terms of just taking care of yourself as a new mom?
It's certainly been challenging. My husband and I have been pretty much doing it on our own for the most part. Lucky for me, he can work from home most days, so I have him as a resource, which is great. Originally, our plan was to have my parents come up. We had them quarantined for 2 weeks. They live in New Jersey. So I had them quarantined for two weeks, and then they were able to come up and visit after that two-week quarantine on both ends of things. But there was a risk there because I, you know, had the preeclampsia. I did have some postpartum issues, and I was in and out of the hospital just, you know, treating that. So even though they were quarantined for 2 weeks in New Jersey, I felt I was putting them at risk having them come up. But I, you know, I needed the help and I wanted them to see their new granddaughter. So it was certainly complicated and an emotional time. Lucky for us now, they're vaccinated. So they are up here right now again visiting, but it was tricky. And my in-laws have yet to see my newborn. So that's kind of sad and disappointing as well.
Wow, Natalie, what a time. Thank you so much for calling in. And all of you, I have so many questions out of Natalie's experience. First of all, to you, Amanda, when you got home with your daughter, how much support were you able to get from family and friends?
So like Natalie, my Nana, who is, I think, going to be 78, so she quarantined for well over 2 weeks so that she could pop in and we could nap for 2 hours. But my mother, my sister, my aunt, everybody who had planned to come and stay with me after the birth directly worked with the public. Like my sister works in the hospital where I delivered, so I've seen both sides too. And they did not get to come or see the baby. My husband works an hour and a half away in Nashua. So I was literally sitting at home in what felt like a prison cell with a newborn baby most days by myself, just trying to navigate and figure things out. He's gone from 4 a.m. to 3 p.m. every day. So for me, for my family and my personal risk assessment, we made the decision at 6 weeks for her to start meeting the family. We like had a note from the doctors about things we could do. So everybody took a shower and took their temperatures and wore masks, and we were outdoors and they didn't get in the baby's face and they held her down, you know, by their waist. So our situation is a little different. And I would just like to say that's one of the things that I find incredibly difficult to navigate as a parent. I have to send my daughter to daycare, right? So she's around other people and there is some sort of risk. I have reached a point where my mental health could no longer tolerate no tolerance. And I have an amazing pediatrician that said, you have to keep living through this. So that has been something that's been very challenging for my husband and I to make decisions on what's best for our family on a daily basis. And I am so thankful I'm able to work remotely and continue to work, because I would go insane if I didn't have that distraction right now.
Yeah. Jaylon, how are you advising your new moms to find support, to find community, even in this still precarious time?
Yeah, it's very challenging. And I think it depends on the mom and the family, like Amanda said. I talk to moms about postpartum and pregnancy mood changes. We know it's one of the most common complication of pregnancy and postpartum. So it's something we talk about, you know, almost at every visit. And I really feel like this, we already are in a modern experiment 10,000 years ago. I don't think we brought our babies home to a house that was isolated. We brought it home into a community, often of other women, our aunts, our grandmothers, our sisters, our cousins, our mothers, and we had so much help. This experiment that we have going on now, where we send a mother and sometimes a partner home to an isolated space with a new baby, we know is failing from a mental health perspective. And then layer a pandemic on top of that, where we're saying, we don't know if it's safe for you to have any support, any help. That is just a recipe for depression, for anxiety, for despair. Anyone who's spent a whole day alone with only an infant will know that it's maddening. It's crazy making. They don't really talk back and give you much in terms of social interaction. So what I try to do is make it very specific in my visits with our clients and say, we know there are things that contribute to overall mental well-being. Where are they in your life? And then how do we carve out the time to get them? So we know you need sleep. We know you need healthy food. We know you need to get outside and have fresh air. We know you need some level of social interaction. And we know that you need some exercise. And so that's a lot of things. And I always point out, you know, when people say, I don't know what's wrong, how many of these things are working right now? And the answer is usually either none or maybe one. And so we really come up with concrete plans about when are we carving out 10 minutes to walk outside? When are we carving out sleep? When are we carving out social interaction and with who? What's your comfort level and safety? Many people living rurally in New Hampshire are living near people that are living rurally and picking up groceries. And is their exposure level high? Maybe not. And are you comfortable seeing them and in what situation? So really trying to get specific with families about how to create those supports for themselves. And then also just talking about the fact that, yes, postpartum mood changes are very real. There is treatment and it works. And it's okay to access medication. You don't have to stop breastfeeding. You don't, you know, none of that has to change. You can continue to be the mom you want to be and maybe enjoy it, which is, you know, for moms that have had a postpartum mood change is sort of like, wait, what? That's possible?
Well, coming up, we will talk more about the pandemic's impact on family planning, how young adults are viewing the idea of having children now, given all the anxiety and uncertainty. Also, questions about the vaccines and pregnancy. So stay with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
I believe in a concept called pay it forward.
Stephen Randall of Northfield recently became a member of NHPR's Leadership Circle.
Because I realized the value that it provided to me personally. And so this is my way of making sure that this news source stays around for everybody.
You can join Steve and pay it forward when you give $100 a month as a member of NHPR's Leadership Circle. Learn more at nhpr.org/leaders.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, pregnancy, giving birth, and bringing home a newborn in a pandemic. If you're currently pregnant or gave birth in the last year, what was that experience like? Also, has the pandemic affected your plans to possibly have children? Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call 800-892-6477. We're talking with Jaylon Von Mertens, a certified nurse midwife at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center in Lebanon. Also, Dr. Sarah Baskell, an OBGYN at Catholic Medical Center in Manchester. And Amanda Lockwood in Keene. She gave birth to her first child in April of 2020. And all of you, let's go right back to our listeners. Deb's calling from Bow. Deb, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My story is a little bit different. It's not a personal story. It's about my daughter. I'm actually the grandmother. She actually grew up in here in New Hampshire, but she went to college in another state and actually settled in that state, which is a state that doesn't necessarily have the COVID precautions that we do here in New Hampshire. She's a high school teacher. And she developed COVID in her third trimester despite everything she did not get it. She had an especially bad case of it. She had to be hospitalized.
Wow.
Not for respiratory business, but for gastrointestinal. She just couldn't keep anything down. So she was in the hospital 4 or 5 days, came home, and her district had gone remote while she was in the hospital. So she was actually able to teach from home, but they were monitoring her. And, of course, she was exhausted. And then she developed a complication, which is a pregnancy complication, but there's no indication of liver issues in my family. It's called cholestasis, where her liver enzymes went very, very high. So they had to induce her at what they thought was 37 weeks. The baby was small. Her delivery was okay, but because he was so little, they kept him in an extra day or two. And then, of course, being in New Hampshire as the grandmother, I couldn't go out there to take care of her when she had COVID, which I would have preferred to do. I've been in the healthcare industry for over 40 years, and I wanted to take care of her. I couldn't. I couldn't go out there when she was, you know, sick afterwards to take care of her. And then about two and a half weeks after they came home from the hospital, the baby developed just some breathing issues and all, which was really scary for a new mother. And he had to be hospitalized, thankfully, at a large children's hospital that they have in the city that she lives in, for 3 days. So it was, you know, it's just been, as a parent watching their child go through her first pregnancy with your first grandchild, it was especially frustrating.
Oh, Deb, what a time. That's just up and down. And I'm so glad you called. And I'm so sorry that all this happened to you. You know, Dr. Baskill, I have read that pregnancy is a condition that can put people at higher risk of more severe COVID, just like Deb's daughter. So go ahead, Dr. Baskill, please.
Yes, and that's something that we discovered, you know, partly through the pandemic, and we didn't know right away. You know, in the beginning, the CDC, just from lack of data, was telling us that pregnant women were not at increased risk. And so it was really hard. You know, women had to work, you know, they're in the front lines teaching kids, you know, healthcare workers. And here we are saying, oh, they're not higher risk. And then come to find out a couple of months later, pregnant women are at an increased risk of severe disease and a much higher risk of hospitalization, just like Deb's daughter, than another healthy woman who's not pregnant. So that's really scary for, you know, any pregnant woman to kind of have that information now and just know that they are at, otherwise, you know, normally they healthy, you know, healthy individuals, just being pregnant alone increases their risk of having complications from COVID.
Yeah, we also got an email from Heather who has a similar question. I wonder how we will know what the effect of catching COVID has been on pregnant women. If that's been tracked, is there any data on it? Is the CDC watching it? Are providers tracking it? So to Heather's point as well, Dr. Baskill, it sounds like, again, if you're pregnant, that is a risk factor for severe COVID. What do we know so far, Dr. Baskill, about the vaccine on pregnant women?
The information we have about the vaccine is now all coming, you know, after the fact, because unfortunately they did not include pregnant women in the vaccine trials. And so we can't give that information to women before they get the vaccine. That being said, we now have thousands and thousands of women who have been vaccinated, and we are tracking that information, and we are not seeing increased rates of miscarriage or preterm birth. But, you know, this is a new thing. We can't give you information about 5-10 years down the road. It's a very complex discussion that we have with our patients about the vaccine.
Yeah, and a novel coronavirus means it's new. And so we're literally learning as we go. So many people have said, you know, building the plane while you're flying it. The Centers for Disease Control, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, and the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine agree that COVID-19 vaccines should be offered to pregnant individuals who are eligible for vaccination. And again, given the story that we heard from Deb and Beau, it sounds like that's a risk factor that is definitely worth considering. Amanda, last question for you, please. You know, it's been such a tough year and you just went through so much having your daughter at the very beginning of all this. What advice do you have, Amanda, for other new mothers who are now in the position that you were in a year ago?
I would say for every obstacle I've encountered, I have also met somebody who has overcompensated and gone above and beyond in some way to make up for the shortcomings for what we're experiencing right now. So I lost my mom's group, but I had a lactation consultant on the phone with me for over an hour talking about sleep hygiene and colic. You know, the nurses that took care of me in the hospital were amazing. And I think there's a lot of mom shaming and crap out there for moms. We don't need another layer of people judging us if we take our kid to the grocery store or something. So I would say back to what I think Jalon was saying, self-care is so important. So do what is right for you and your family. Don't worry. There's enough anxiety and worry right now with COVID. You don't need to add to it. And find time for self-care, whether it's reading a book for 10 minutes, getting outside and going for a walk, or taking a really hot shower and doing some yoga stretches there. Like, I've just really noticed a difference when I can experience little moments of joy. And I would also say, I might sound like a very emotional, depressed mother. I love my daughter, and it has been so amazing to track her milestones. So every week I write down something new that she's learned, and that keeps me going. So there is joy in motherhood, even amidst the pandemic, and I'm very hopeful for the future. So that's a lot, but that's what I would say.
Amanda, that's great. Thank you so much for being with us and sharing your story, and good luck with your little girl.
Thank you.
That's Thanks. Amanda Lockwood of Keene. She had her first child in April of last year. Again, listeners, it's been great hearing your stories, taking your questions about what it's like to experience pregnancy and having a newborn in a coronavirus pandemic. Our number is 800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. With us now is Allison Kreutz. She's the mother of a five-year-old, and she's also currently pregnant with twins due next month. Wow, Allison, welcome to the Exchange. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Laura.
How did the pandemic affect the early days of your pregnancy? You discovered you were pregnant in August.
I did. The first surprise I had was that when I called my OBGYN to let them know that I was pregnant and schedule my first appointment, they said that they couldn't see me until I was at least 12 weeks in. And my appointment wound up being scheduled for, I think it was almost 13 weeks. And it was at that appointment where the OB thought that my uterus was measuring a little larger than it should be for how far along I thought I was. So she had me come in for a dating ultrasound a week later, and it was at that ultrasound, so I was almost in my second trimester at that point, where I found out I was having twins. So that was a shock.
So that's an instance where they didn't see you for a while because of the pandemic, and then you found out you were having twins. What was your reaction, Allison?
I was floored.
I bet.
Really, we don't have twins on either side of the family, and they were able to tell at that first appointment or at that first ultrasound that they were in fact identical twins, which there's no kind of genetic predisposition for anyway. So, I mean, you know, they had to pick my jaw up off the floor. There were probably three different staff members in the office who said to me during that visit, "Are you okay?" Because I was so obviously in shock.
So you have a five-year-old already, Allison. So how has this pregnancy, besides the twins part, obviously, felt different than your first pregnancy?
It's been drastically different. When I was pregnant with my daughter, Sylvie, my husband and I were living in Portland, Maine. And to prepare for the limited freedom that we knew was coming our way as parents of a newborn, we took lots of opportunities to kind of fill the tank with experiences. So we went to concerts, and we went to movies, and we went out to eat, and we spent a lot of time with our friends. And with this pregnancy, there's been almost none of that. We have a few core close friends in our bubble who we get to see, and that is always really, really great. But other than that, there really haven't been opportunities, or at least opportunities we felt comfortable taking for the kind of pre-baby experiences that we stocked up on with my last pregnancy. So that's been really hard.
So Allison, Dr. Baskill, and Jaylon, lots of listeners who want to weigh in. So let's go to the phones. And Josh is calling from Guilford. Hi, Josh. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You can hear me all right, right? Yeah. So real quick, you know, shout out to every mother out there who's been going through this. You know, with my wife and I, it was very tough. We were lucky enough to have a baby girl in July of this past year. And Allison was talking about the limited freedom, and that's totally true with our firstborn. You know, new parents, we knew all the limited freedom we were going to have when he was born. Now the second one, it's completely dropped off. So in a weird way, it's been a perfect time to have a baby where we're not seeing our friends. They're not going out either, but we're still able to connect over FaceTime and all of our family and stuff across the country through FaceTime. But at the same time, it is pretty tough because we can't get out and have those date nights that, you know, new parents need, especially with two children. So,
right. Have you been able to get help at all from family or friends, Josh, or has that just not been sort of safe for you or available for you?
Well, we have. We've waited until my father's gotten the vaccine. So we have. We enjoy being home with our children. Lucky enough, we can kind of work from home most of this time and just spend, you know, we were really terrified of everything, you know, all the way up until, I mean, we still are. We're still very cautious going out with a newborn because we don't know the long-term effects of anything, you know. So we have, but we've kind of just, you know, been a little staying on the safer side of everything.
Well, Josh, it's really good to hear from you. Thank you for calling in. And we actually have another Josh in Londonderry calling in. So go ahead, Josh, you're on the Exchange.
Hey, glad to be on the Exchange. Hello to the former Josh ahead of me. My wife and I were pregnant with our first child in November before the everything started to happen, before we even knew that there was COVID coming. So it was a very exciting moment for the first few months. And the more pregnant she got, the more terrifying the world seemed to get with all the uncertainty.
Right.
And it really had a big impact, particularly on my wife, who was bearing our child, but for both of us trying to figure out what kind of world we were bringing our first child into and what that meant. We were originally from Michigan, so all of our family is back home. And so there was all those questions about whether or not they would be able to come and visit to see their first grandchild, et cetera. So it's a very stressful moment in time for a while.
How have you been able to sort of get a relief from that stress, you know, get any kind of support, Josh?
Yeah, so we really spent a lot of time with each other and talking through things with each other. And, you know, if there is a silver lining to the pandemic, it has been that we both have been able to work from home up until a couple of weeks ago. And so I was able to support her and everything instead of, you know, when we had the child and we brought him home, he's super great, super healthy now, and he's a delight. But I was able to do a lot more to help her. I didn't have to waste time going back and forth to work. So just being there emotionally for one another and having each other's back.
Well, it's great to hear from you, Josh. And Jaylon, something that comes out for me from both of these calls is, you know, not only just it's hard, but they're trying to make it work. But I'm struck, Jaylon, on how things have changed. Here we are a year out from the pandemic. We heard from Amanda earlier who, you know, had her baby in April when we didn't even have COVID tests, you know, and everything was so scary and unknown. How has your own role changed in this process, Jaylon, over the past year where we kind of sort of know what we're doing?
Yeah, it has definitely changed. I think, you know, I think unfortunately for Amanda, I feel like she really got hit at the worst time, right? We had nothing, didn't know if we had masks, I think I remember in April, we were wearing masks and being told we don't know if they work, but voluntarily wearing them. And just, I really feel for her because that I think that was the hardest time. You didn't have a bubble in April. You were just yourself. You didn't know. Right. You didn't know if that one, I mean, I remember telling my in-laws who are elderly and live here in New Hampshire that, you know, yeah, put your groceries in a box for 72 hours outside your door and then bring them inside because we think the, you know, the virus dies after 72 hours. So I feel like I've even forgotten so much of some of the stuff we were doing, washing chip bags, you know, I mean, just things that we know now are, we're not doing that anymore, right? We didn't know if that trip to the grocery store was deadly. I remember having three carts instead of, you know, the handful of things that I might go pick up now. And I think we know a little bit more about how we've learned you can't really live in social isolation. It doesn't work. So how to bring people in and who is safe to bring in, you know, with school age kids and then newborns, how to navigate that. We've found that daycare, you know, has worked for the most part, although it is stressful and scary. I will, you know, give it that. In our work, not so much has changed. They really solidified the PPE that we needed to wear, and that's what we wear. We really try and do as much as we can to, like, I put a space suit on to be in a room with a laboring and birthing mom so that she doesn't have to. And, you know, I put a lot of gear on to be in a prenatal visit with someone so, you know, they can just wear a mask. And I think that we've learned a little bit more about how things are transmitted and how to prevent transmission, and just some general safety. And I think that's helped a lot because, yeah, in March and April, we didn't know anything. The novel was really novel.
Well, Dr. Baskill, to you, what sort of protocols are in place now during labor? You know, does the mom have to wear a mask? Are she and her partner tested for COVID before they come in? I know early on, you know, only one other person was allowed in the room or no one. Now, are there two people allowed? Like, what's changed in terms of that process?
It's different at every hospital, you know, across the United States. And even here in New Hampshire, a lot of it is based off of, you know, what are the rates in the community. But, you know, here at Catholic Medical Center, we do screen and test all of our laboring women for COVID on admission. And once we got the capability to do that, it was actually really nice because we were able to open up more options that we knew were probably safe that we used to have. So for example, you know, laboring and using nitrous oxide, which is a gas that you inhale. And, you know, when anybody's worried about a respiratory disease, and we're kind of talking about using something where women are huffing and puffing, that was something that we were really nervous about in the beginning. That is really nice now when we know someone's COVID negative, they can have that option. You know, we still have the visitor restrictions. I don't know when those are going to go away in the United States, but they've loosened. And I try to reassure all my patients, you know, at Catholic Medical Center and all the labor and delivery units around the country, we really want to be patient and family centered. So it's really, you know, to protect the staff and the moms. And so, you know, we consider doulas part of the birth team. And so, you know, we have doulas that are able to come and the patient's partner is able to be there. It's not perfect. And, you know, we're learning as we go. But again, I think Jaylon mentioned it well of we now have the PPE that we didn't have before. So that also protects a lot of us healthcare workers to then have more freedoms for the patients.
Well, we have to take a very quick break, but when we come back, more on what it's been like to give birth this past year, to bring a newborn home. We have so many emails from listeners as well, so we'll try to get to those after a very short break. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
Hi. I listen to NHPR because it opens up my world.
Peg Hendel of Waterville Valley is a proud member of NHPR's Leadership Circle.
I really value the fair and well-researched and well-balanced information that I get. That's something I just had to support.
You too can join NHPR's growing family of Leadership Circle members when you invest $100 a month into the statewide news service you trust at nhpr.org/leaders.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, working from home, how it's evolved over the past 12 months, and what the future might be. Join us for that conversation tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today, we're talking about pregnancy during the pandemic and coming home with a newborn in this unprecedented year. Exchange listeners, let's hear from you. If you're pregnant or a new parent, what has the past year been like for you? Our email, exchange@nhpr.org, comment on Facebook, or call 800-892-6477. Jalon von Mertens is with us, a certified nurse midwife at Dartmouth Hitchcock, Dr. Sarah Baskell, an OBGYN at Catholic Medical Center, and Allison Kreutz, the mother of a five-year-old and pregnant with twins, due next month. And all of you, lots of emails that I'd love to share with you. Jamie says, my heart is aching for these women and families. Everything they're saying right now hits me like a bullet. I had twin boys in 2018 and struggled from severe postpartum depression. If I had to go through that rough time with COVID restrictions and anxiety on top of it, I don't know how I would have made it. Mothers need to be healthy and well so we can be the best mothers to our children. And sometimes in COVID times, that means taking a slight risk for the benefit of your mental health. Sending so much love and strength to all these mothers giving birth during the pandemic. Jamie, thank you so much. And Allison, I do want to turn to you. How are you sort of thinking about your postpartum time and getting the physical and emotional support that you'll need?
Well, my mom is going to be quarantining with us leading up to my scheduled delivery. They are planning on taking the twins via C-section. A little early because of the type of twins they are, and I also have gestational diabetes. So my mom offered to quarantine with us so that she can be there to help and take some of the burden off of my husband and myself, and also keep our five-year-old daughter occupied. One of my biggest fears has been how hard it's going to be for Sylvie with my husband and myself focused on these two new babies. So I'm so grateful that my mom is going to be there. And my husband's work has been very understanding. They're going to let him work from home at least a few days a week so he can be present and help me. And my work has likewise been very understanding about the situation. And I am so, so grateful that spring is around the corner.
That helps.
Because yes, so much. I'm so glad I'm going to be able to be outside. And, you know, knowing that spring is coming, there may be more safe opportunities to see people and to, you know, possibly introduce people to the babies while they're still babies. So I've been trying to keep that in my mind that I'm not going to be as sequestered as I have been throughout the winter. So I'm hopeful for that. I hope I get some time to spend in the garden or, you know, to take a walk by the river. And I'm really, really grateful that, you know, I have a very supportive husband and that my mom is willing to do so much to help us out.
You know, Dr. Baskell, we've heard from so many people this hour about grandparents helping out. And it seems to me, Dr. Baskell, the fact that a lot of older people are now getting vaccinated could be a game changer for these new parents.
Absolutely. It's so exciting to, you know, when a patient comes in and just is exuding joy because they found out their parents were able to get vaccinated, and it opens up just another layer of support that hadn't been there before. So, and even the pregnant patients who are choosing to get vaccinated, kind of having that big sigh of relief as well. So the vaccine is a welcome game changer in this pandemic.
I want to squeeze one more call in if we could. Bethany's joining us from Keene. Hi, Bethany. Thanks for calling The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Sure can, Bethany.
thank you so much for doing this piece, and thanks for taking my call. Birth in the pandemic has really changed a lot. And we've been seeing, I'm a home birth midwife, and I also work out of the birth center in Swansea here. We're outside of the hospital. I have a New Hampshire license to practice outside of the hospital. And we've seen a lot of folks kind of exit the hospital system to have their babies at home because they're not feeling comfortable either with how care has changed in the hospital since the pandemic started, or they're not feeling comfortable with potential COVID exposure going out into the world to have their baby. So, yeah, it's just been a really wild ride this past year.
Yeah, on so many fronts, right, Bethany? Thank you for calling. And just very quickly, Jaylon, what about that? Some people choosing to have home births or births at a small birthing center because they don't want all the restrictions and concerns about hospitals.
Yeah, I mean, as a midwife and as a mom who's had a home birth, I absolutely support women's choices to birth where they want to. The thing about out of hospital birth is the level of commitment that you have to have towards it. And so, and really you take on some different things when you choose an out of hospital birth. Like, there's not really pain medicine in your house, and anesthesia doesn't come. So people really have to make sure that they understand what they're getting into. But absolutely, that has been something that we've seen up at Dartmouth and Lebanon. I would also say it's, you know, with that change, there's also people who've wanted that who unfortunately haven't been able to do that because of whatever reason they developed a complication. And they've come to us and said, you know, it turned out okay.
That's what Amanda told us earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, I mean, hers sounds really hard. right. So I do think those options and opportunities have, you know, have opened up, and maybe those practices have grown. And that, you know, of course, as a midwife, I'm always going to support that.
Bethany,
I think one of the,
sorry to jump in there. Yeah. I just want to thank Bethany for calling. And boy, in the last 2 or 3 minutes that we have left, I did want to ask all of you, and Allison, you first, what advice do you have for expectant mothers who are in your position? You know, this pandemic is ongoing. What advice do you have for people who might be in the same shoes as you?
Well, I think perspective is really important, especially after hearing about what Amanda went through. And I do have some close friends that had babies right around the same time she did. I am so grateful that I am going to be having these babies in April of 2021 and not in April of 2020. And, you know, so many people have died or have lost loved ones. And for those of us who are pregnant right now, even with how scary it still can be, we're literally carrying the future around inside our bodies, and we're going to bring new life into a world that's been so marked by loss lately. And I think that's really powerful, and it's worth remembering. And, you know, it's important to remember what you're contributing, not just to your own family, but to the world at large by going through what you're going through right now. So just keep looking ahead. It's gotten better. It will get better. It's tough, but you can do it. We can do it.
Wow, that's beautiful, Allison. Bring new life into a world that has experienced such loss. I'm hoping that, you know, all the new parents and pregnant women out there heard you say that, because that's really a profound statement. Dr. Baskill, what special advice are you giving your patients during this time?
I frequently advise something, a theme that I kind of been hearing, you know, from Amanda and Allison, as well as some of the callers of, you know, you need to ask your care team, you know, questions so that you can make informed decisions, you know, ask questions about the vaccine and, you know, advocating if you, you know, being seen in person, if that's something, you know, that you feel is important. But then you have to live your life. And that's really important for your well-being. And we always, you know, it sounds cliche, but it's so true. Keeping moms healthy, they are, you know, is how we get healthy babies and healthy children. So getting outside, going for those walks, it's probably one of the most common prescriptions that I recommend is to get outside. And now that the spring is coming, it is a welcome spring. Because you have to be smart, but we can't live in isolated bubbles. And so figuring out what that means for you and your family, and then proceeding forward, and don't look back.
Jaylon, advice very quickly. We only have about 30 seconds left. I do apologize.
No, I think one of the most common things I talk about in visits is just recognizing what is inside your locus of control and what is not, and really focusing on what really is there. And that's how you move your body and what you eat and who you interact with. And so, like Dr. Vasco said, focusing on self-care for pregnant people and new families. Wow. And then managing anxiety as needed and recognizing what it is and how we deal with it.
Thank you so much, Jaylon, for that and for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Really glad to talk about this topic.
That's Jaylon Von Mertens. She's a certified nurse midwife at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center. And Dr. Baskell, I'm sure you're very busy. It was great to have you too. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
That's Dr. Sarah Baskell. She's an OBGYN at Catholic Medical Center. And Allison, good luck with the twins. And thanks for making time out.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
That's Allison Quirt. She's the mother of a five-year-old, pregnant with twins, due next month. Today's show was produced by Exchange producer Jane Vaughn. Thanks for being with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.